It's Sound Effect on KPLU. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and today we're telling stories of being locked in. This next story deals with death, and in it, you'll hear a number of fairly harrowing 911 calls. It is not an easy listen, and we wanted to warn you that if you're sensitive to this kind of conversation, or if there are young kids around, this may be one to skip. It's about 18 minutes long. But if you feel like you can handle it, you definitely should listen because it's an extraordinary story. And here with me now is the person who made it, Sound Effects senior producer, Arwin Nix. Hi, Arwin.
Hey, Gabriel. I bring you an interview with a pretty well-known civil rights advocate, Charlene Strong. Strong is on the Washington State Human Rights Commission. A documentary was made about her part in the fight for marriage equality.
Yeah, and you talked with her about what inspired her to get into this life of activism.
Yeah, I did. Charlene told me that she works tirelessly for two reasons. First, to honor her late wife, and to remind people that we're all equal. We're all flawed. We're all human. That's her goal. And in this conversation, we focus on the night that it all started, 9 years ago, on the night of the infamous Hanukkah Eve storm.
Okay. Seattle Police and Fire, Pedal 107.
Yes, this is an emergency call for my neighbor is locked in the cellar and the cellar is flooded.
Stay on the line for the fire department.
I'm calling 911 now. Is there any window we can break?
Fire medic 1, what is your address of the problem, please?
My address is 537 30th Avenue East, but it's my neighbor on the other side of the street that's locked into her cellar, and the cellar is flooded.
Okay.
It's flooding.
Yeah, there's a number of floods going on. Is the water coming in from the outside?
Yeah, there's water coming in from the outside.
Okay, you need to call the water department, okay?
Sorry?
You need to call the water department. They're going to deal with that.
She is flooded. She's locked into the basement. She's locked into the basement. There's
She's
a person in there.
She can't get out?
No, that's the problem. And my neighbor, she can't get out.
Walking home, I thought the rain was really heavy. But, you know, that's not terribly uncommon for a fast-moving storm through Seattle. And I kind of listened to the news, but I'm terrible about listening to the news. And so I kind of was like, eh. But when I stood out on the porch with my brother, this water was pooling in the streets like I had never seen it do before. And I called her and I said, have you looked outside? I said, this is impossible. My brother said, well, it looks like the kind of rain we have down in Louisiana and Mississippi. And I knew that because I grew up there, right? And so I said, well, you know, I said, let me know when you're wrapping things up. Well, then I get a call back and she said, you know, there's a problem here. She said, there's water coming in to the basement and I'm going to go downstairs and I'm going to start moving my equipment upstairs.
So the basement is where her studio is, where she records these audiobooks.
Right.
So there's a lot of things down there that she's trying to maybe save from the rain?
Correct. One of the things that Kate loved about this little 1906 bungalow was that it had a windowless basement area that we could very easily convert to a sound studio. And it became her sanctuary. It became where she spent 8 to 12 hours a day recording, never taking into account proper egress, the fact that a wall had been taken out and replaced with cinder block, and there were no windows. It was a windowless basement, which was not up to code, as we know. And it's a grim reality of understanding when you realize there was only one way out, and that way out was covered in water. And so when she called me, I said, don't go down there. But I knew in the back of my mind that she wouldn't heed my warning. But I grew up in the South where we had flash floods and raining and torrential downpours. And we all knew that you don't go into a flooding area because you can be electrocuted if the power comes back on or what have you.
So why did you know that she wouldn't heed your warning?
Because she loved what she did.
Seattle, please.
Yeah, 538 30th Avenue East. I'm trapped in a room that's filling with water.
538 30th Avenue East?
Yes, I'm trapped in a room.
Okay, okay, hold on, please. Let me get the fire department. Hold on.
Okay.
Ostensibly was a flash flood that undermined the foundation of our home and pushed in the north wall of our house and shifted our house off of its foundation. So by the time that I got to her, it was pretty much a lost cause, but I wasn't going to give up.
Just one sec here. We'll get them. They're getting thousands of calls.
Fire and medic one, what's the address of the problem?
538 3rd Avenue East. I'm trapped in a room filling with water.
Tell me the address again, slowly.
538 3rd Avenue East.
All I could hear was water running, rushing, rushing water. It was like somebody had turned on the largest hose I'd ever heard, and it was powerful. And when I got down the stairs, she said to me, and she said, I need you to take a deep breath, and I need you to get me out, and I need you to be my hero. And those were the most, like, get out of your own self, get out of the way, listen to this woman. She needs you right now.
So what were you thinking when she said that?
I listened, like I'd never listened in my life. I need you to be my hero is not something that you hear someone say to you every day.
5, 3, 8, 30th Avenue East. Ma'am, slow down. Start over.
It's fire, 538 30th Avenue East.
I'm not hearing anything.
Okay,
538 30th Avenue East.
30th.
How high was the water when you got home?
To my waist. In the basement.
And at this point, you get two pins out of the door
mm-hmm.
from the hinges.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens?
And I tried for the third, and I couldn't get it.
This is a sound studio, essentially. Can you hear her?
I can hear her talking to 911, saying, I'm at 538 30th Avenue East. I am trapped in a basement. I can't get out.
Which room are you in? Which room are you in? Which room are you in? Are you hearing that radio?
No, I'm not. Ma'am, what part of the house are you in?
Basement.
Okay.
She's in a windowless room that has a French drain that is backed up, filling up, and it's in the dark. She was in complete darkness and can feel the water rising around her, and she can't get out. The 911 operator likely couldn't hear her because of the chaos in the room going around them. But at the time, I was the maddest person on earth. I just couldn't understand why I had to endure this nightmare. And it was a nightmare.
I'm 538 30th Avenue East.
What's going on there?
Somebody is drowning in their basement.
Someone's drowning in their basement?
Yes. Stand
the line.
911.
Okay, so stand the line. Let me get the medics.
So it gets to the point where you can't hear her anymore because the water gets to a certain level.
I had to leave her because the water was at a certain level.
What happened?
So when I was unable to remove the two pins, I went upstairs and I had to get out because I was then underwater and consumed a lot of the water into my chest. Was able to spit it out and I was able to feel my way out, but I was between a heater vent and a wall.
And you couldn't see anything.
About a foot, and there was no power. I couldn't see a thing. But I got out, which meant I left her behind. And I did try to go upstairs, and I kind of started thinking about the way in which our HVAC was constructed. And I thought if I could kick the heater vent out in our bedroom, which was that it, by some miracle I could find her head and at least hold her above ground until the firefighters came or somebody came to rescue us. But it was futile. I couldn't do it.
Did you know if anyone was coming at this point?
I had been assured by my neighbors who said, someone's coming. They're coming. Now, a firehouse was only two blocks away, but they had been called out because it was a horrific storm that night.
Sir, so, there's actually firefighters responding to this location. Has anything changed?
I'm just checking because it's very bleak.
So what?
I'm checking that somebody's responding because it's very bleak.
Okay, because fire is responding.
Okay.
Okay, has the situation changed?
Yes, I don't think she's alive.
You think the person's passed away already?
Yes, there's all I can see. I lived on the stairs and I didn't see any water.
Okay, is the whole room flooded?
I have never been in that house before, but I looked down the stairs and it looks like the whole basement is water.
Fire medic one, what's the address of the problem?
Fire, are you responding to 538 30 Avenue East?
Yes.
Everyone was trying desperately to find someone to help us. They were screaming out as much as I was.
How long did it take before help arrived?
I don't know if I even know. It felt like an eternity.
Seattle Police and Fire 41.
I need the fire department quick.
What's the address?
527 30th Avenue East. I was just talking to somebody. There's somebody drowning in a basement across the street.
Hold on, stay on line.
What happened next?
My neighbors graciously grabbed me up and pulled me next door and put me in clothes that were dry because I was incredibly cold and incredibly dirty. And my hair was caked with mud. And I waited. Jeff came over and said, "They found her body. They have her out. They have a pulse. We're going to Harborview."
This is in 2006.
Yeah.
And at this point in Washington State, gay marriage is not legal.
No.
Your marriage was not recognized. You get to Harborview after a perilous drive with your brother that night. It's still storming out. And you have to get one of her family members on the phone to get permission to go back and be with her because of the way the laws are at the time.
That was not anything I thought I would ever encounter. I mean, I guess I lived in ignorant bliss. I think a lot of gay and lesbian couples have unfortunately experienced that ignorant bliss of love. That in modern times, who questions? Who cares? Who cares that Kate and I have spent 10 years and we've shared our bank account, our love for each other, our mortgage, our faith? It never occurred to me, because of who I was to her, that anyone would care. But they did care. I never thought about being with a woman or being gay until it was called into question by someone else who was either frightened by it or uncomfortable by it for whatever reasons. And when I finally got her sister on the phone, her sister was trying to figure out what I was telling her, that her sister had drowned. But once she figured it out, she was like, "Oh, for Christ's sake, get her back there. Get her back there." And when I got back there, I was remember just feeling this moment of rage, like, how dare this person tell me that I can't be with this person after what I have witnessed, what I've heard her tell me to do, and the responsibility that I felt on my shoulders of, I need to be her hero and getting her out. And when the nurse told me, "It's not good," I said, "I bet." I said, "But keep working. Just keep working."
What happened with Kate?
I have to tell you that once I was given permission, it was like the angels all pulled the smartest and the brightest and the most loving, compassionate people together at Harborview. And they treated her like they were, that she was their own. And the dignity that they gave her, I'll never forget. But when I got back there, they were stabilizing her enough in her functions that they put her into ICU. And when I got to ICU, they said to me, "Are you leaving? Will you be staying the night?" And I said, "You couldn't pry me off of her." And they left the room to get a cot and pillow and, you know, the courtesy kit, toothbrush and all, whatever. And when I was alone with her, I was holding her hand and she started to code. And next thing you know, there was just a swarm of people in the room and they're, you know, working on her. And she was already intubated and they were working as hard as they could to keep her heart going. And they had a room set aside and they brought me in there. And this little tiny doctor came in this orange scrubs. And she said to me, "Charlene, it's not good. What do you want to do?" And I knew what Kate wanted. I knew she didn't want to go on if she couldn't be Kate. We'd had those discussions. I was the one who knew, not her mom, not her sisters. I was the one. And so I said to her, "How bad is it?" And she said, "Well, her systems keep checking in and her systems can't keep going. And she's too cold and we can't get her warmed up." And they said, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "Can we try for 20 more minutes?" And they were pounding on her and they were beating on her and they were working on her and they were electrocuting her chest, you know, doing the shock. And I said, "Stop, just stop." And then they all left and the room was quiet. And it was just about five or six of us in the room. And I asked them to remove the intubation tube, and they said, we can't. And I said, no, you don't understand. I have to kiss her goodbye.
What does it feel like now when it storms?
I would like to tell you that it's easy, but it's not. The wind was blowing yesterday, and I've since moved to the highest point of Seattle in the Magnolia neighborhood out of fear of water. But it's the wind that never quiets itself. And the wind was howling last night, and it's a sound I can't release myself from. But in Harborview, when I followed Kate's body to the morgue, the doors were all shaking and the wind was truly howling. And it was as if the gods were screaming out, not, no, this can't happen. And I remember walking behind her gurney and just wanting to crawl in there and hide with her. I would have stayed there forever. But that's not what we do, right? You know, I think sometimes people want to keep you from what they know about you, right? And so people know me as this person who experienced this great trauma, who then went on to kind of advocate for justice and civil rights. And they always want to keep you there. And they want to hold you in this pain-filled environment. And you know, I was a really funny person before Kate died. And I actually love being a funny person. I think I'm the funniest person in Seattle. Whether or not anybody else thinks that is another story. But some of the absurdity of exposing yourself and allowing yourself to be an advocate has been probably one of the most painful parts of choosing to stand up for someone I love so passionately. It hasn't always been kind. It hasn't always been generous. But in my heart, sometimes I feel very bitter at the lack of compassion that we have for each other and the lack of understanding. You know, I didn't choose to do anything that I'm doing. I chose to love someone, and I chose to be their tireless advocate and stand in their honor and speak eloquently, I hope, about the horrific dysfunction of inequality.
So to not paint you into a corner, to not just make you a one-dimensional advocate for mm-hmm. this issue, what are the other things? You're funny? You're a mother?
I'm a mom. I love being a mom. It is a depth of innocence that I don't know that I always felt as a child. And so for me, it's like hearing my daughter singing Frozen songs at the top of her lungs and Sophia the First with her 18-month-old brother chasing her is the therapy that no one can give you. It's what we as parents, as lovers, as friends can do. We can say I love you to your friends every time you leave them. We can hug your friends, tell people you appreciate them. And that's what those babies do. You know, when they run to me every night when I pick them up, there's nothing like it. They taught me to be kind and to move through the world with my hands open.
Sound Effects senior producer Arwin Nix speaking with equal rights advocate Charlene Strong.